It's an American iconic song. Our guest, Lee Greenwood, to talk about his brand new book, Proud to Be an American.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live.
If tomorrow all the things were gone, I'd work for all my life, and I had to start again with just my children and my wife. I thank my lucky stars to be living here today, 'cause the flag still stands for freedom, and they can't take that away. And I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free.
And now, Chief Counsel for the American Center for Law and Justice, Jay Sekulow.
Who gave that right to me, and I gladly stand up next to you.
Welcome to the broadcast, everyone. A happy July 4th week to you as we celebrate our independence, our freedom, and our liberty. Our guest on this broadcast is going to be Lee Greenwood. You know him, of course, as the writer, the performer of God Bless the USA. He's got a brand new book out that is called Proud to Be an American, and it was actually illustrated. It's a children's book. It goes through the lyrics of the song. We're going to talk a lot about where the song originated from, the ideas of freedom and liberty, how Lee came up with this, some of the memorable moments when Lee has sung the song at so many different occasions. The illustrations of the book were done by my daughter-in-law, Amanda. We do have a lot to celebrate, and we'll be talking about freedom and liberty with Lee and just a little bit later in the broadcast. We'll actually have a performance of the song, God Bless the USA, with our band here, our Jay Sekulow band. We're thrilled to have that. Lee's going to be performing that. We'll have that later in the broadcast as well. But I wanted to take a moment here and ask you to join me as we pray for our men and women in uniform, serving around the globe, defending all of us for freedom. We sometimes take it for granted. The fireworks go up. We celebrate liberty and freedom, but this freedom and liberty we have is hard fought. And our men and women in the military need our prayers and support. So I want to encourage you to do exactly that, to pray for them. Continue to do that. You know, we've had a battle on this issue of religious freedom in the military, and that's in part because there's a group of organizations. One's the Military Freedom from Religion Foundation. There's others as well that have really made it their mission to go after, especially Christians, serving in the military. Sometimes it's the chaplains, sometimes it's officers, sometimes it's others involved with military service. They object to any real reference of faith in practice when it comes to the men and women serving in our military. So I want to let you know that this is an ongoing battle that we're engaged in. It's a fight. I'm happy to say it's a fight we're winning. By the way, every time these groups file lawsuits, whether it's the Military Freedom from Religion Foundation, Freedom from Religion Foundation, you've heard about them before. They're the ones with the Bible warning stickers. Every time they file lawsuits, they end up losing. We end up winning. Our side wins. There is no doubt that our men and women, just like you and me, we have religious freedom, religious liberty, and that includes men and women serving in the military. Our job right now is to protect that. We are proud to be Americans, and we're thrilled that we're going to be joined in a few moments by Lee Greenwood. But I want you to take time this holiday week to pray for our men and women who are serving in the armed forces. And again, pray for our lawyers also in the field fighting these cases here in the United States. And let's not take for granted, for one moment, do not take for granted the liberty and freedom that we have. You know, I travel all over the globe. We have offices in Russia, offices in France, offices in Africa, offices in Israel, offices in Pakistan. Let me tell you something. We live in the greatest country in the world, and we have freedoms that no one else enjoys. So at this particular holiday, let us say we are proud to be Americans. We do celebrate our freedom, our liberty, our freedom of speech, our freedom of association, our freedom of worship, all part of what we have in our First Amendment. Our founders were brilliant. But let's stand with our military right now. We've got a petition up at aclj.org we want you to sign. It's standing with our military for religious freedom in the military. That simple. Go to aclj.org or 1-877-989-2255. That's aclj.org or 1-877-989-2255. When we come back from the break, we'll be joined by Lee Greenwood. We'll talk about his brand new book, Proud to Be an American. Illustrations by my daughter-in-law, Amanda. We'll be back with more in just a moment.
And I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm...
Americans' freedom under attack by the biggest and most dangerous branch of government, the federal bureaucracy. In his new book, Undemocratic, How Unelected Unaccountable Bureaucrats Are Stealing Your Liberty and Freedom, ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow sounds the alarm. It's a powerful look at what's become the fourth branch of government. It's not in the Constitution, but the federal bureaucracy has become an out-of-control, unelected monstrosity that robs Americans of their rights through endless rules and regulations. In Undemocratic, Jay Sekulow, a New York Times bestselling author, provides a plan to fight back and explains why personal freedoms don't have to become a thing of the past. This must-read is available now in bookstores nationwide. You can order your copy online at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or Apple iBooks. Learn more at undemocraticbook.com. It's time to put an end to the systematic abuse of the federal government. When it was first released last fall, Rise of ISIS skyrocketed to the top, becoming a number one New York Times bestseller. ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow and his Law of War team revealed the brutality of ISIS, the Islamic State, putting a much-needed spotlight on this real and present danger. Now this best-selling book, Rise of ISIS, has been revised and updated with critical new insight and new analysis. Find out how ISIS continues to expand, to dominate, to unleash unspeakable violence against Christians and others, and find out what needs to be done to stop them. A revised and updated edition of Rise of ISIS, A Threat We Can't Ignore, is available now at bookstores nationwide. Or you can order a copy online at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or Apple iBooks. Rise of ISIS, available now.
Next to you and defend her still today. Cause there ain't no doubt I love this land. God bless the USA.
Well, as I said, we're joined by a very good friend and someone that really needs no introductions, Lee Greenwood, as we're celebrating our independence, our freedom and liberty. I couldn't think of anybody better to have in the studio than Lee Greenwood. I'm thrilled that our television audience is with us as well. Lee's got a brand new book. This is a must-have. I will tell you, this is a great book. It's called Proud to Be an American. You see it up there on the screen. It goes to the lyrics of God Bless the USA. Lee, welcome to the broadcast. It's always great to see you.
Thank you very much. I'm very comfortable around Americans, as you might imagine.
I can imagine. Yeah, that's who you're talking to. So let's start with the song, because God Bless the USA, I said this earlier, is really an iconic song in Americana now. I mean, it has really become a symbol of America. How did you develop the song? What was going on? Because it's a song, you've had the song out for a while, and it keeps always doing fantastic.
You know, it's a runaway in my career, recording career.
Yeah,
and,
sure.
And when we recorded it in 1984, it was a single in 1984, 85, and then Song of the Year in Nashville at the CMA in 1985. It was really just a suggested cut on my You Gotta Give Love Comin' album that year, because I knew that the major cut would be the title song of the album, the CD. Wasn't a CD then, the album.
Right.
And Patrick Duffy was in the video with me. I got to play saxophone on it. It was a really cool thing, and it was all slated for the summer release.
Yep.
And I wrote USA on a Bus one night, along with some of the other songs I was writing. But you got to realize that MCA, it was me and Reba and George Strait and the Oak Ridge Boys and Barbara Mandrell, and we were required to turn in two albums a year. Every 6 months, we had to have 10 songs. So we'd go about 50 songs to get to those 10. And I wrote a song for every one of the first albums, because I was writing all the time on my bus, but I'm doing 300 days a year on the road.
Right.
So it's hard to be creative and yet be challenged with, you know, interviews and constant recording and shows. And so this was just another song I wrote. It wasn't necessarily something I put years into.
Yeah.
Not to say, Jay, that I hadn't thought about this for a long time.
Sure.
And how to help unify America. I'm from California, not from Tennessee, but I've settled in Tennessee, and I've seen an awful lot of the country in the last 30 years, and really just there's nothing else I don't want to see other than this country. I love the geography coast to coast. And when USA came out, the attention that we got was just because of the one line, I think, in the middle. Well, the two things. Proud to be an American, of course.
Right.
That was the first thing I said. Is that, you know, I hadn't heard for years people say they're proud of who they are as an American. Oh,
right.
You're Italian-American, you're French-American,
right.
You're English-American.
Right.
But come on, we're American first.
Right.
With the exception maybe the Indians,
right.
And the African-Americans.
Right.
They may have a legitimate request to say,
yeah.
I'd like to put that title first. Everywhere else, we should just be proud of who we are. And then a line in the middle of the song called "I Won't Forget the Man Who Died." Okay, now,
yeah.
I did not lose a father nor a son. I did not serve in the military. But you got to remember all the people who signed the Declaration of Independence, they weren't military.
Right.
So you got to—
Civilians.
Talk about a civilian patriot. And that's what I intended to do when I wrote the song, was just be a civilian patriot.
Did you think when you wrote that song that that particular line would be the line that would stick so significantly, is the emotion of the song reaching that point?
Well, you know, when anybody listens to a song, I think what they do is they remember the one line they can. It's generally the first line of the chorus.
Right.
Actually, the title of my song is the payoff, is the end of the chorus, God Bless the USA. But when I said I'm proud to be an American, or at least I know I'm free, suddenly people related to that. They'd stuck in their mind. They forgot about the first and the second verse, and that's all they remembered. And after these 30 years that I've lived with the song, I decided to title the book Proud to Be an American rather than God Bless the USA.
I want to ask you, and the book, by the way, is available in bookstores everywhere. We'll have links up, of course, on our Facebook pages. And you should go to Lee's Facebook page as well. So like his Facebook page. A great book, Proud to Be an American. I want to ask, so you went with Proud to Be an American as the title. And who was the book reaching? I mean, I'm asking a question I'm intimately familiar with because my daughter-in-law did the illustrations. But what was the target here? Why now for this particular book?
When we, and I proudly tell you, both my sons are really educated well. My 16-year-old straight A, my 20-year-old was valedictorian of his high school, now is at Washington Lee studying biochemistry.
Wow.
I guarantee you that their reading ability was increased by the fact that when we were young parents and they were 6 months, a year old, 2 years, 3 years old, we set them on our lap in the rocking chair, and I still have the rocking chair, by the way.
Yep.
And Kim and I would take turns reading to them with a book in front of them. A real hard copy book, unlike a digital.
Right.
And I know all the kids today are in the iPads for right. school and everything, and I see the advantage to that. But a real book opens up their mind to dreaming and to talk about this world that is out there for them to discover. And so when the kids look at the pages of this book, so I'm targeting that audience 2 to 7, 3 to 7, right in there. And there's a grandmother and a grandfather in that first page. And the reason is because I was raised by my grandparents. And mm-hmm. so this was basically grandparents guiding a young boy through the early parts of his life and saying, not just look at the vastness of America, not just the love and nurturing that we're going to give you as a young boy, but also remember the respect on how to be a patriot of America. And that's why we show the flag, the military, and a few other things.
So you've performed this song countless times all over the United
Presidents,
States.
Presidents, you name it.
Right. What would be the most meaningful of the performances you've done?
Well, that's tough, you know, because they're all different, particularly for those Gold Star families who come see my
Let's
shows.
Let's talk about the Gold Star families.
That's a killer, you know, and when they come to see my show, I always take the time before the show and or after, if it's convenient for them, and they wear the, you know, they have the little Gold Star, you know, I know who they are immediately. They've lost a son or a daughter in the war. And interesting, they really want to talk about it. It's
yeah.
not something that's like sad enough they want to hush. They are proud of the sacrifice their child has made for our country, and they want other people to know about it. So the first thing I do is ask them, where was your son or daughter killed? Give me the date. Tell me this country they were killed in. And that really eases their pain a little bit. Give them a big hug. And those concerts, Jay, are really tough when I know they're in the front row.
Yep.
But I look back, you know, at some of the things we've done and some of the places I've sang. I have to tell you, the pinnacle of me singing God Bless the USA was at the Ronald Reagan Library opening.
Mm.
And it was 5 presidents and 6 first ladies.
Wow.
And Johnny Grant came to me, who was the mayor of Hollywood, came to me and he said, before the show, he said, okay, I've got 4 F-18s going to come out of Simi Valley and fly over the top of this thing. And because you're going to be on the podium, I'm the only one on the podium. I've got Nixon, Ford, Carter, Bush, and Reagan.
Mm.
It's Reagan's day, Bush is president. So, and I worked with both of them.
Yeah.
You know, I even worked with a Carter some.
Right.
I mean, it wasn't Democratic or Republican. This is a beautiful day for the presidents, and it probably never happened again.
Right.
You get 5 of them together. And so he says, I want the presidents to stand up. I said, Johnny, how am I going to get the presidents to stand up? Reagan was a little bit aloof. I mean, he was an actor. He knew to engage you, but then to disengage you
right.
and make you like it.
Uh-huh.
And so as I'm singing on stage, I'm looking down the line, and they're all looking forward, you know, and it's kind of a bright day outside. It's sunny, you know, it's hard to imagine how hot it might have been. And I get near the line of the song where I say I gladly stand up, and I'll be darned, Ronald Reagan turns and looks right at my eyes. And I'm like, dang. And I say, gladly. He stands up.
Mm.
And when he stands up, Bush stands up as his friend and now
right.
president. When president stands, everybody
right.
stands up, and here comes the Jets.
So it was perfect timing. Right over
the top. So when I finished, I shook hands with every one of the presidents and their wives.
Yep.
Each one had their wife sitting next to them, went down the line to Lady Bird Johnson, who was at the end, of course, without her husband.
Right.
And so this is the hand right here.
This is that's a pretty
I can't name another time.
After 9/11, the song took on a different dimension again, I think, for the country.
It did. It did. I was in Los Angeles, and many people who were not in their home state or city were sequestered. We could not fly, as you know. Right. The only way to get out of town was to go buy a car. And we canceled a number of shows along the way, and I immediately got my manager, Jerry Bentley, and I said, why don't we get a hold of New York and find out if there's anything I can do for the mayor? And so Mayor Giuliani had called us back immediately and said, we're preparing. This was the second day of after the attack. We're preparing already a fireman's memorial because there were 300 gone there. There were 200, or not quite 100 policemen. So we arranged to go back to New York. I sang the fireman's memorial at Carnegie Hall with Governor Pataki,
right.
President Clinton, all the cleric. It was Mark Anthony who sang America the Beautiful, and Bette Midler sang Wind Beneath My Wings.
Yep.
So I did USA. And then we did at Carnegie Hall, the Policeman's Memorial. And then I went back and sang the fourth game of the World Series.
That was a very memorable event.
Yankees Diamondbacks, and that went seven games. And we thought, and they pulled it out twice in the ninth inning. I thought, they're going to win this thing. And they didn't. But it was a great spirit for New York. But the streets were deserted for years.
Oh, I know. You know, I was in our office in Norfolk when it happened. My oldest son was a student at George Washington University. He was working for the Justice Department. The plane that hit the Pentagon flew 300, 400 feet right over their head.
Right over the top.
They saw it. And then, of course, I was up there a couple of days later and worked on a lot of the legislation afterwards. And it was a game-changing moment in the United States. But USA, the song really, again, spoke to this new level of patriotism. And is that... We're going to take a break here in a minute, but I want to talk about the patriotic aspect of this and go a little bit more into the education of why the book. The book's called Proud to Be an American. It's available wherever books are sold. We encourage you to get it. It is a great book. Let me tell you something, folks. We need to understand the heritage of our country. We take it for granted. I mean, a lot of us do. We live in the great sky. Like I said, we've got offices all over the world. There's not another country I would rather live in than here. My grandfather came from Russia. He was 14 years old, and he became a naturalized citizen of the United States 14 years later, and he was American and very proud of it. And he was a fruit peddler in Brooklyn, New York, and his grandson gets to argue cases at the Supreme Court of the United States and be in the radio studio with Lee Greenwood.
Nice.
You can't get much better than that. We're going to be back with a lot more with Lee Greenwood in just a moment.
Still stands for freedom, and they can't take that away.
When it was first released last fall, Rise of ISIS skyrocketed to the top, becoming a number one New York Times bestseller. ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow and his Law of War team revealed the brutality of ISIS, the Islamic State, putting a much-needed spotlight on this real and present danger. Now this best-selling book, Rise of ISIS, has been revised and updated with critical new insight and new analysis. Find out how ISIS continues to expand, to dominate, to unleash unspeakable violence against Christians and others, and find out what needs to be done to stop them. A revised and updated edition of Rise of ISIS, A Threat We Can't Ignore, is available now at bookstores nationwide. Or you can order a copy online at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or Apple iBooks. Rise of ISIS, available now. Americans' freedom under attack by the biggest and most dangerous branch of government, the federal bureaucracy. In his new book, Undemocratic: How Unelected, Unaccountable Bureaucrats Are Stealing Your Liberty and Freedom, ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow sounds the alarm. It's a powerful look at what's become the fourth branch of government. It's not in the Constitution, but the federal bureaucracy has become an out-of-control, unelected monstrosity that robs Americans of their rights through endless rules and regulations. In Undemocratic, Jay Sekulow, a New York Times bestselling author, provides a plan to fight back and explains why personal freedoms don't have to become a thing of the past. This must-read is available now in bookstores nationwide. You can order your copy online at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or Apple iBooks. Learn more at undemocraticbook.com. It's time to put an end to the systematic abuse of the federal government.
If tomorrow all the things were gone, I'd work for all my life.
Welcome back to the broadcast, everyone. Lee Greenwood's our guest. The book is Proud to Be an American. It's a great book. I will tell you that as a grandfather, and I will tell you it's had a new meaning to me, and I've been listening to this song forever. Let's talk about, you touched on it a little bit. There is this sense in a multicultural society that we sometimes take for granted. I don't apologize for American exceptionalism. I think it's a good thing. I think we are an exceptional people and an exceptional country. That doesn't mean other countries don't do great things, by the way. But I think America has set a standard for freedom and liberty that no one's been able to match since recorded history. This book at this time, you talked a little bit about being raised by your grandparents and the idea, and people will be seeing pages of the book as we're talking about it on the screen. Part of the idea here was to educate a generation.
Absolutely.
Talk a little bit about that.
Absolutely. The current generation, with 8 years of our current administration, they have nothing but the message of citizen of the world.
Yep.
Our sovereignty is threatened. The world doesn't respect. And in the Bible, the word respect and fear are synonymous.
Right.
Okay. I'm not saying we have to intimidate anybody, but we do need a defense so we can once again be this world power. We are no longer a world power in most people's eyes. And with the rise of ISIS, with your book,
right,
so wonderfully done, and our approach to world politics, this generation in their 30s and 40s will not have any unity whatsoever. They are looking to scatter off the United States because they don't recognize its strength. This book, hopefully, when you read this to your 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6-year-old kid before they get into school, 15 to 20 years from now, they will also feel, number one, what it feels like to be a patriot, why you need to be a patriot, the sovereignty of the United States, the vastness of it. And I show a map of the United States,
yep,
in it. When I mention the cities from New York to Los Angeles.
We'll show that on the screen right now. Yeah,
yeah, it was important to see the vastness from a child's perspective because those are places they're going to visit someday. And this way, and those, they're not red and blue states, by the way. They're all
right,
different colors so that
right,
you could just define the states. And to see from Los Angeles to New York how far it is from Detroit to Texas, these kids are going to visit those places on their own someday.
Right.
And I wanted them to see that from the lyrics of my song, but also in pictorial.
Do you have a sense, and because you travel a lot as I do, do you have a sense that there is also, though, this renewed desire to understand the uniqueness of America? I sense it, that it's been so lost that there is this question out there. Why is it that we're so special as Americans or exceptional as Americans?
Well,
I'm starting to see that as a real question.
You say something that is very correct, and that is kids are questioning more of everything now.
Right.
With my son at Washington and Lee, liberal arts college, they will tend to question every possible thing. So only the solid beginning we gave him gives him some roots. Otherwise, he'll begin to question the nation, our military.
Yep.
Our constitution, and why we're a country of freedom and independence. So, I think kids, but I think it's dual-fold. I think first of all, there's that faction of kids who say, I want to go out and experience the world and find out countries that are great as ours or greater than ours.
Right.
There's that other faction, I think, that it says, you know what, nothing's going to shake my belief that America is the greatest country on the world, and I'm going to try to find out why. Here's what we lack. We lack creative and invention.
Mm.
During the space industry and the space,
yes,
race, that's what made America great. Through the discovery of minerals and products, the Silicon Valley and all that explosion of stuff. You know, there are other countries that make good stuff, but America was a leader in all of those fields. And suddenly, because we can't drill for oil, you know,
right,
we haven't got a pipeline. We have a reduced military. Do you know that we only have less than 1% of the population now that serve in the military?
Yeah,
and used to be as much as 30%.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of the lowest it's ever been.
No, I'm not saying that we haven't got a great military, nor do we have...
Strongest military still in the world, but a military that is put under unbelievable constraints. I've handled some of those
issues.
Talk
to those guys doing three and four tours.
Yeah. So, all right, so with the book... by the way, when you get the book, you also get a free download of the song, God Bless the USA, so that's part of the book here.
And may I point out,
yes,
no one's ever heard that version before.
So this is a version no one's heard.
I recorded that especially for the book.
So tell us a little bit about that version.
It's softer.
Yep.
And the reason I made it softer, because when parents download the song, they'll obviously play it for their kid while they're reading the book.
Right.
So it's a little bit of a softer approach from the beginning so that they'll just not be intimidated by the power of it.
Yeah, because the song has got, I mean, it's a very emotive song, but I could see how you could take it down a notch, so to speak.
Yeah, it's actually lower key.
Wow. Well, I'm looking forward to listening to that. We have found, and I know you're seeing this with books, that when you hit a topic, the book kind of takes off on its own. Mm-hmm. You're already seeing that. I mean, I saw you when you were on Sean Hannity.
Oh,
I'm shipping you copies of ours. I mean, it's a good problem to have. As I told when Amanda was asking me about it, I said it's a good problem to have. This is the kind of problem you want to have. Were you expecting this kind of response to the book at this particular time? I mean, you knew when I remember when we talked, you knew it was going to be this. You felt in your gut this was the time to do it, but to get this kind of response early in the gate.
No, because to me, well, books and records, CDs or what do you want to call music, is different. They're quite a bit different. And all of my autographs generally that I do with the public are after my performances, my public performances. In this case, we're going to do book tours all across the Southeast first, then in the rest of the United States. And as you know, that can be quite rigorous. And that's where you really meet the people who love to read books, not just listen to music. So they're getting both in this book.
Yeah, which is a great thing. Let me ask you this. When you sang for those Gold Star, and I don't want to go too deep into this because I know it's emotional. I've talked with a number of the Gold Star families, and they've called. And you're singing the song, and do you sense when you're talking to them that they get a little bit, more recently, they're a little bit discouraged? Because of some, they still understand that their sacrifice was for our freedom.
Yeah. I have never met a family yet where the brother, sister, even a wife.
Yeah.
Might be different with a wife, but family, parents, you know, who are so proud of their son or daughter and their service. Now, I mean, you know, they're sympathetic. They're
right.
hurt. They're, you know,
sure.
they're
grieving.
They'll never get over it. They'll never get over the grieving. But no, I've never sensed that.
Yeah, I don't either. But, you know, some in the media try to paint it that way.
Oh, absolutely.
And I think, you know, part of our job is to countervail that. Anyways, we are out of time, but let me tell you what we're going to do. The book is called Proud to Be an American. It's available in bookstores everywhere, of course, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, wherever you get books. You will get the download of the song, God Bless the USA, the special version for this. So we're really encouraged about that. Get the book. We'll have links to it on our Facebook page as well. And like Lee's Facebook page also. Lee Greenwood has a Facebook page. That's going to do it for the broadcast this week. Thanks for being with us. I won't forget the men who died, who gave that right to me. And I gladly stand up next to you and defend her still today. 'Cause there ain't no doubt I love this land. God bless the USA. Oh, and I'm proud to be an American.
Americans of their rights through endless rules and regulations. In Undemocratic, Jay Sekulow, a New York Times bestselling author, provides a plan to fight back and explains why personal freedoms don't have to become a thing of the past. This must-read is available now in bookstores nationwide. You can order your copy online at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or Apple iBooks. Learn more at undemocraticbook.com. It's time to put an end to the systematic abuse of the federal government.
We will fight for the right to live in.
Welcome back to the broadcast, everyone. I'm reading excerpts from my book, Undemocratic. I talk about the problems facing our country, the attacks on freedom and liberty by an unelected, unaccountable fourth branch of government, and that's the bureaucrats. But I also provide solutions in the book on how we can take our government back. But the purpose of the book is to educate you, our friends that listen to this broadcast, and to share it with your friends as well. So the book is Undemocratic. Here's where we need your help. We need you to order the book and get your friends to do the same thing. So the book's called Undemocratic. You can get it at Amazon, Barnes & Noble. You can get it online, or you can get the ebook version or the hard copy or wherever books are sold. Again, the book is called Undemocratic, How Unelected, Unaccountable Bureaucrats Are Stealing Our Liberty and Freedom. And it's available in bookstores everywhere, certainly on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Apple. Ebooks available again, or the hard copy. I encourage you to get it today. Now let's go back to the book.
And make no mistake, lower-income Americans are our core Democratic constituency, as evidenced by the last presidential election. In 2012, Mitt Romney won the popular vote among all voters who make between $50,000 and $100,000 per year by 6 percentage points. He won all voters who make more than $100,000 per year by 10 points. Together, these two constituencies accounted for the large majority of the electorate, 59%. But Barack Obama won mainly on the strength of voters who make less than $50,000 per year, winning the lower income portion of the electorate by 22 points, Obama's 60% to Romney's 38%. Moreover, this lower income section of the electorate was far larger in 2012, making up 41% of the total voters. That same lower income economic demographic was only 37% of the total vote in 2008, during the depths of a catastrophic recession. By now, it should come as no surprise the left-leaning IRS is engaged in a massive transfer of wealth from wealthier Americans to this key leftist constituency. After reading hundreds of documents about IRS lawlessness, I thought I couldn't get any more cynical about the IRS until I read this report from an April 2013 edition of The Hill. The Internal Revenue Service overpaid between $11.6 billion and $13.6 billion in tax credits designed to help low-income families in fiscal 2012, the Treasury Department announced in a report released Monday. The overpayments account for 21% to 25% of the tax credits issued under the Earned Income Tax Credit, the EITC, the IRS estimated. The report from the Treasury Inspector General for Tax Administration, the department's IRS watchdog, highlights the difficulties faced by the agency in properly issuing refunds and credits under the popular program. Though the fiscal 2012 overpayment was among the agency's lowest in a decade, since 2003, as much as $132.6 billion has been improperly distributed as part of the EITC. It gets worse. The Treasury Inspector General went on to say that the annual EITC improper payment amount has consistently been one of the largest of all federal programs. Read that again. An improper IRS payment scheme is so vast that it, by itself, is considered a federal program. This goes without saying, but $132 billion is a lot of money. In December 2013, the Tax Foundation reported, relying on IRS data, that there were 68 million tax returns filed by individuals in the top 50% of income. These top 50% paid 97.1% of all federal income taxes. To give you some perspective on what this $130 billion overpayment means to the top 50% who actually pay the federal income tax, if you take 97.1% of that $132 billion, roughly $128 billion, and divide by the number of tax returns, then this IRS overpayment has cost each filing unit, which can include married couples as one filing unit, almost $2,000.
Again, the book title is Undemocratic. It is available wherever books are sold, but certainly on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and Apple iBooks. And by the way, we've got both an e-reader version, which is for your Kindle or your Nook or your Apple iReader, as well as the hardback. So if you go to Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or wherever you buy your books, ask for Undemocratic, How Unelected, Unaccountable Bureaucrats Are Stealing Our Liberties and Freedom. Jay Sekulow, that's me. I'm the author. We want to make sure you get the book again, Undemocratic, wherever books are sold.
Americans' freedom under attack by the biggest and most dangerous branch of government, the federal bureaucracy. In his new book, Undemocratic, How Unelected Unaccountable Bureaucrats Are Stealing Your Liberty and Freedom, ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow sounds the alarm. It's a powerful look at what's become the fourth branch of government. It's not in the Constitution, but the federal bureaucracy has become an out-of-control, unelected monstrosity that robs Americans of their rights through endless rules and regulations. In Undemocratic, Jay Sekulow, a New York Times bestselling author, provides a plan to fight back and explains why personal freedoms don't have to become a thing of the past. This must-read is available now in bookstores nationwide. You can order your copy online at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or Apple iBooks. Learn more at undemocraticbook.com. It's time to put an end to the systematic abuse of the federal government. When it was first released last fall, Rise of ISIS skyrocketed to the top, becoming a number one New York Times bestseller. ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow and his Law of War team revealed the brutality of ISIS, the Islamic State, putting a much-needed spotlight on this real and present danger. Now this best-selling book, Rise of ISIS, has been revised and updated with critical new insight and new analysis. Find out how ISIS continues to expand, to dominate, to unleash unspeakable violence against Christians and others, and find out what needs to be done to stop them. A revised and updated edition of Rise of ISIS, A Threat We Can't Ignore, is available now at bookstores nationwide. Or you can order a copy online at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or Apple iBooks. Rise of ISIS, available now.
Welcome back to the broadcast, everyone. I'm reading excerpts from my book, Undemocratic. The purpose of the book is to educate you, our friends that listen to this broadcast, and to share it with your friends as well. So the book is Undemocratic. You can get it online, or you can get the ebook version or the hard copy or wherever books are sold. Again, the book is called Undemocratic, How Unelected, Unaccountable Bureaucrats Are Stealing Our Liberty and Freedom. And it's available in bookstores everywhere, certainly on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Apple. Ebooks available again or the hard copy. I encourage you to get it today. Now let's go back to the book.
No one doubts the plight of the poor. No one disputes that properly targeted and properly executed government aid programs can benefit our nation's most vulnerable citizens. But the United States of America is allegedly a nation of laws, and when one of its agencies can dramatically disregard the law and provide more than $130 billion in wrongful overpayments to a conveniently politically aligned constituency, then the rule of law itself is at risk. Yet, as I said in the previous chapter, that's not all. If you want to know how the IRS unilaterally rewrote one of the most complex federal statutes of all time, imposed untold billions of dollars in costs on the American people, and, quote, saved President Obama's most unpopular reform, continue to listen. The IRS rewrote Obamacare. As originally passed, Obamacare was structured to do a number of things. Mandate that individuals purchase insurance. Mandate that businesses provide insurance to employees. Provide incentives to states to shoulder as much of the administrative burden as possible by setting up insurance exchanges. And require that states dramatically expand their Medicaid programs to make Medicaid available to families that were well above the poverty line. To put the best spin on this structure, the goal was apparently to mandate coverage without creating a federal program so monstrously large as to be unmanageable. By delegating authority to the states, the program could, in theory, be more nimble and responsive to citizens' needs. To make insurance affordable, the law required generous tax credits to subsidize the cost of insurance for most middle and lower middle class families. To encourage the creation of state exchanges, the tax credits to individuals were available only if a state elected to set up its own exchanges. Under the law as written, these tax credits were not available if the state declined to set up an exchange and instead referred its citizens to the federal exchange for insurance purchases. In a 2012 speech, one of the key architects of Obamacare, Jonathan Gruber, explain the system. Here's a key portion of the transcript. Questioner: You mentioned the health information exchanges for the states, and it's my understanding that if the states don't provide them, then the federal government will provide them for the states. Gruber: Yeah, so the health insurance exchanges, will be these new shopping places, and they will be the place that people go to get their subsidies for health insurance. In the law, it says that if the states don't provide them, the federal backstop will. The federal government has been sort of slow in putting out its backstop. I think it's partly because they want to sort of squeeze the states to do it. I think what's important to remember politically about this is that if you're a state and you don't set up an exchange, that means your citizens don't get their tax credits. But your citizens still pay the taxes that support this bill. So you're essentially saying to your citizens, you're going to pay all the taxes to help all the other states in the country. I hope that's a blatant enough political reality that states will get their act together and realize there are billions of dollars at stake here in setting up these exchanges and that they'll do it. But you know, once again, the politics can get ugly around this. This is all quite simple. If the state does not set up an exchange, then, under the plain and unambiguous reading of the law, its citizens do not get insurance subsidies. Critically, without the insurance subsidies, the first tenet of Obamacare, required insurance, would be impossible to afford. Without the subsidies, insurance becomes costly enough that fail-safe Obamacare provisions kick in that essentially kill the law's infamous individual mandate. Specifically, taxpayers are not supposed to pay more than the set percentages of their income on health insurance. If the cost exceeds the percentage, then they are exempt from the mandate. The National Journal explained it like this: the mandate includes an exemption for people who can't afford coverage, and without subsidies, millions more people would qualify for that exemption. As a result, if a state did not want its citizens to be subject to the individual mandate, it could opt out of the exchanges and dramatically limit Obamacare's application to their state. Opting out of an exchange meant opting out of much of Obamacare. State after state made that choice. Ultimately, 36 states refused to establish an exchange, effectively telling the federal government that the individual mandate should not apply to their citizens. Obamacare's viability was at stake. So here came the IRS riding to the rescue. Early on, the IRS wrote draft regulations that complied with the plain text of the law, providing tax credits for insurance purchased through the state exchanges only. But then the IRS realized what was at stake. The Wall Street Journal's Kimberly Strassel picks up the story. An early draft of the IRS rule about subsidies explained that they were for exchanges established by the state. Yet early in March 2011, Emily McMahon, the acting assistant secretary for tax policy at the Treasury Department, a political hire, saw a news article that noted a growing legal focus on the meaning of that text. She forwarded it on to the working group, which in turn decided to elevate the issue, according to Congress's report, to senior IRS and Treasury officials. The Office of the IRS Chief Counsel, one of two positions appointed by the president, drafted a memo telling the group that it should read the text to mean that everyone, in every exchange, gets subsidies. At some point between March 10th and March 15th of 2011, the reference to exchanges established by the state disappeared from the draft rule. In other words, the IRS made a political decision to rewrite the law and provide subsidies to insurance purchased through either the state or federal exchanges, a change that unilaterally imposed massive new financial burdens on taxpayers by opting them into a system their state government had opted out of. The story gets worse. As Strassel reports, career civil servants were worried they were breaking the law as they responded to pressure to revise IRS regulations to contradict the Obamacare statute itself. In a functioning bureaucracy, lawyers would exercise basic oversight functions to make sure that regulations implemented the clear language of the statute. Here, governmental lawyers decided to implement not the law, but a political goal. Again, from Kimberly Strassel. Yet rather than engage in a basic legal analysis, a core duty of an agency with tax laws, the IRS instead set about obtaining cover for its predetermined political goal. A March 27, 2011 email has IRS employees asking Health and Human Services, HHS, political hires to cover the tax agency's backside by issuing its own rule deeming HHS-run exchanges to be state-run exchanges. HHS did so in July 2011. 1 month later, the IRS rushed out its own rule, providing subsidies for state and federally run exchanges. The IRS passed this new rule to save Obamacare, to preserve the viability of the individual mandate, not to enforce the law as written. And it was immediately challenged in court. Faced with disaster, leftist defenders of Obamacare lapse into hysterical language, claiming that the provision limiting subsidies to insurance purchased through the state exchanges only was a mere typo or drafting error. On July 22, 2014, two federal courts of appeals handed down conflicting rulings on the legality of the IRS's unilateral change. The Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals, based in Richmond, Virginia, held that while the question was close, the IRS rule should be upheld. The Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit, however, disagreed, holding that the statute means what it says and the IRS's subsidy expansion was unlawful. In its ruling, the Court of Appeals explicitly recognized the stakes. The court wrote, "We reach this conclusion, frankly, with reluctance. At least until states that wish to can set up exchanges, our ruling will likely have significant consequences both for the millions of individuals receiving tax credits through federal exchanges and for health insurance markets more broadly. But high as those stakes are, the principle of legislative supremacy that guides us is higher still. Within constitutional limits, Congress is supreme in matters of policy, and the consequences of that supremacy is that our duty, when interpreting a statute, is to ascertain the meaning of the words of the statute duly enacted through the formal legislative process. This limited role serves democratic interests by ensuring that policy is made by elected, politically accountable representatives, not by appointed, life-tenured judges. With conflicting court rulings, the matter will now be decided by the Supreme Court. Indeed, a decision may be issued by the time this book arrives in bookstores, but a judicial ruling on the technical legality or illegality of IRS action will not change the fundamental facts. The IRS, acting on its own, rewrote the law." That's not the only time the IRS has intervened decisively to put its own ideological imprint on a hot-button political issue.
I've been reading excerpts from her book, Undemocratic. It is available in bookstores everywhere. Look, the fact of the matter is freedom is under attack like never before. And the truth of the matter is the fourth branch of government, which doesn't exist in the Constitution, by the way, are the unelected bureaucrats. And unfortunately, they have become the most powerful branch of government. So I'd ask you and your friends to go buy a copy of Undemocratic, How Unelected, Unaccountable Bureaucrats Are Stealing Our Liberties and Freedom, and How We Can Take It Back. And I believe we can take it back if we work together on this. Again, the book title is Undemocratic. It is available wherever books are sold, but certainly on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and Apple iBooks. And by the way, we've got both an e-reader version, which is for your Kindle or your Nook or your Apple iReader, as well as the hardback. So if you go to Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or wherever you buy your books, ask for Undemocratic, How Unelected, Unaccountable Bureaucrats Are Stealing Our Liberties and Freedom. Jay Sekulow, that's me. I'm the author. We want to make sure you get the book again, Undemocratic, wherever books are sold.
When it was first released last fall, Rise of ISIS skyrocketed to the top, becoming a number one New York Times bestseller. ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow and his Law of War team revealed the brutality of ISIS, the Islamic State, putting a much-needed spotlight on this real and present danger. Now this best-selling book, Rise of ISIS, has been revised and updated with critical new insight and new analysis. Find out how ISIS continues to expand, to dominate, to unleash unspeakable violence against Christians and others, and find out what needs to be done to stop them. A revised and updated edition of Rise of ISIS, A Threat We Can't Ignore, is available now at bookstores nationwide. Or you can order a copy online at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or Apple iBooks. Rise of ISIS, available now. Americans' freedom under attack by the biggest and most dangerous branch of government, the federal bureaucracy. In his new book, Undemocratic, How Unelected, Unaccountable Bureaucrats Are Stealing Your Liberty and Freedom, ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow sounds the alarm. It's a powerful look at what's become the fourth branch of government. It's not in the Constitution, but the federal bureaucracy has become an out-of-control, unelected monstrosity that robs Americans of their rights through endless rules and regulations. In Undemocratic, Jay Sekulow, a New York Times bestselling author, provides a plan to fight back and explains why personal freedoms don't have to become a thing of the past. This must-read is available now in bookstores nationwide. You can order your copy online at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or Apple iBooks. Learn more at undemocraticbook.com. It's time to put an end to the systematic abuse of the federal government.
Welcome back to the broadcast, everyone. I'm reading excerpts from my book, Undemocratic. I talk about the problems facing our country, the attacks on freedom and liberty by an unelected, unaccountable fourth branch of government, and that's the bureaucrats. But I also provide solutions in the book on how we can take our government back. But the purpose of the book is to educate you, our friends that listen to this broadcast, and to share it with your friends as well. So the book is Undemocratic. Here's where we need your help. We need you to order the book and get your friends to do the same thing. So the book's called Undemocratic. You can get it at Amazon, Barnes & Noble. You can get it online, or you can get the ebook version or the hard copy or wherever books are sold. Again, the book is called Undemocratic, How Unelected, Unaccountable Bureaucrats Are Stealing Our Liberty and Freedom. And it's available in bookstores everywhere, certainly on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Apple. Ebooks available again, or the hard copy. I encourage you to get it today. Now let's go back to the book.
Let's turn now to immigration, where the IRS is a law unto itself. The IRS's unilateral immigration reform. Immigration reform is undoubtedly one of America's central political challenges, with deep feelings on all sides of the debate. Certainly, there is enormous sympathy for struggling immigrants who left desperate circumstances in their own country to seek a better life in the United States. After all, as I described in the second chapter, that's my own family story. In fact, in late 2014, I testified before the House Judiciary Committee regarding the unilateral action to, as President Obama said, change the law regarding immigration. At the same time, there are real victims when border controls aren't enforced. National security is at risk with porous borders. A flood of low-skilled workers can depress and stagnate wages and increase unemployment. And public services can be strained to the breaking point with schools, emergency rooms, and other state services left to deal with populations who often have little money, face linguistic challenges, and often bring with them the economic and health struggles of the nations they left. Seeking to control the border isn't racist, it's common sense. At the same time, welcoming immigrants isn't foolish or irresponsible. It's the American way. Any lasting immigration deal will have to balance our very real national needs and limits with our equally real desire to welcome new citizens and continue America's robust immigration tradition. In other words, it's not easy. Unless, of course, you work at the IRS, where you can unilaterally give away billions of dollars to illegal aliens. In October 2013, the Center for Immigration Studies released a report showing that mid-level bureaucrats implement a policy change that funneled $4.2 billion in additional child tax credits, ACTC, to illegal aliens without congressional permission and even without the approval of senior IRS leadership, the Washington Times explains. The additional child tax credit was created to help out those who make too little to qualify for the full child tax credit. The ACTC is refundable, meaning that even if the taxpayer doesn't owe income tax, he or she could get a payout from the IRS. That becomes an avenue for fraud, particularly when combined with illegal immigrant workers whose use of the tax credit has jumped from 796,000 filers in 2005 to 1.5 million in 2008 and 2.3 million in 2010, according to the IRS's official auditor. In fact, the markers for fraud were obvious. Investigators identified one address in Atlanta where 23,994 individual tax identification numbers, ITIN, related tax refunds were sent, including 8,393 refunds deposited to a single bank account. I suppose when an agency is busy auditing tens of thousands of adoptive families, engaging in a nationwide targeting campaign against conservative speech, or handing out tens of billions of dollars in improper earned income tax credit payments, it's stretched too thin to find real fraud. The story gets worse. The IRS made a policy decision to, in the words of the Treasury Inspector General, essentially legalize illegal aliens. In July 2013, CNS News told the complex story. First, Congress passed the Illegal Immigration Reform and Immigration Responsibility Act, a law that required interagency cooperation in identifying illegal immigrants. Section 642 of this law said that no other law or official could bar any agency or official from providing information about illegal aliens to the Immigration and Naturalization Service, the INS, the agency then responsible for enforcing immigration law. It didn't take long, however, for the IRS to essentially overrule a congressional statute through its own regulation. This regulation said the IRS would grant what it called individual taxpayer identification numbers to aliens who did not qualify to work in the United States and did not qualify for Social Security numbers. The IRS had three basic requirements for people receiving these numbers. First, they had to be an alien. Second, they could not be qualified to work in the United States or have a Social Security number. And third, they owed taxes in the United States. Additionally, as with all Americans, the IRS must keep tax information confidential, and with a few exceptions, may not share that information with other government agencies. The Inspector General, however, did not agree with this reasoning. In September 1999, the Treasury Inspector General for Tax Administration, which has oversight of the IRS, published an audit report on the ITIN regulation. It was titled, "The Internal Revenue Service's Individual Taxpayer Identification Number Program was not implemented in accordance with Internal Revenue Code regulations." The Inspector General essentially said keeping aliens' tax information confidential was in direct conflict with the federal statute. The Internal Revenue Service, the IRS, made a policy decision to issue IRS Individual Taxpayer Identification Numbers, ITINs, to illegal aliens so tax filing obligations could be met, said the IG. This IRS policy to legalize illegal aliens seems counterproductive to the Immigration and Naturalization Service, the INS, mission to identify illegal aliens and prevent unlawful alien entry. This is the modern bureaucracy in action. You may listen to this section and sympathize with the IRS. How should it collect taxes from illegal immigrants? After all, if they're working in the United States, they should pay taxes on their earnings just like anyone else. You may even think the IRS made the right policy decision. But that's besides the point. A bureaucracy does not exist to overrule the elected legislature. It is not the role of unelected bureaucrats to make policy decisions that contradict federal law. If the federal law creates issues for tax collection, then that is a matter for Congress to decide, not a matter for the IRS to determine, especially when its determinations so frequently help core Democratic constituencies or so neatly dovetail with Democratic Party priorities. The IRS scandals go on and on, but for the sake of brevity, I'll address one more. The IRS goes to space. Bureaucrats gone wild, the IRS conference scandal. In 2013, less than a month into the IRS Tea Party targeting scandal, word broke of IRS misconduct that was far less consequential, but far more amusing. In this scandal, the IRS didn't target dissenting taxpayers, it didn't wrongly distribute billions of dollars in taxpayer funds, nor did it rewrite and contradict federal statutes. Instead, the IRS leadership decided to dance. You heard me, dance. In a June 2013 video of the IRS's frivolous training videos, one of them a Star Trek parody and another a Gilligan's Island parody, the other, the best one, was a video of a line dancing lesson in the Cupid Shuffle.
Again, the book title is Undemocratic. It is available wherever books are sold, but certainly on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and Apple iBooks. And by the way, we've got both an e-reader version, which is for your Kindle or your Nook or your Apple iReader, as well as the hardback. So if you go to Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or wherever you buy your books, ask for Undemocratic, How Unelected, Unaccountable Bureaucrats Are Stealing Our Liberties and Freedom. Jay Sekulow, that's me. I'm the author. We want to make sure you get the book again, Undemocratic, wherever books are sold. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next time.
Robs Americans of their rights through endless rules and regulations. In Undemocratic, Jay Sekulow, a New York Times bestselling author, provides a plan to fight back and explains why personal freedoms don't have to become a thing of the past. This must-read is available now in bookstores nationwide. You can order your copy online at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or Apple iBooks. Learn more at undemocraticbook.com. It's time to put an end to the systematic abuse of the federal government.